Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
I even have like a story about the Paul Rudd thing. So I actually ran into him like months later. Hey, you know that look at us, who would have thought, not me thing? Did you expect that to be a thing? And he was like, I didn't remember that the second I walked out of the door.
Welcome to the Kevin Clancy Show. I've been in this game over a decade, and I knew I needed a place where I could run wild on my own solo podcast, where I tell personal stories, I deep dive into conspiracy theories, we rip through the current events of the day, and we do sit-down conversations with the most interesting people on the internet. Make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss an episode. What's up, you mutts? It's another edition of the Kevin Clancy Show. The Spite Tour rolls on. Today, we got Sean Evans, the host of Hot Ones, which is one of, if not the most popular series on the internet. We're talking hundreds of millions of views, an OG internet guy over on Complex, just putting out week after week, star after star, hit after hit. Hot Ones is the perfect internet series, and he's one of the most like down-to-earth regular dudes who probably shouldn't even be. I mean, that guy is on a level where it's like he should just be rubbing elbows with famous people and becoming executive producers of things, and you know, traveling the world while he eats hot wings with superstars, and had no problem coming through, sitting down with me and doing an hour plus. And that's the point of the Spite Tour, baby. It rolls on. If you look at what we're doing now, we are officially into phase two of the Spite Tour. And I swear to God, if anybody else was doing this, if it wasn't me at Barstool, who was, you know, I've been here for like a billion years, so everybody is just kind of used to me putting things out. And it's like, oh yeah, that's just another thing from KFC. If there was a new person who was interviewing the names that I am throwing out there, I feel like it would be a monster series. So everybody's got to do their best to promote it, post about it. Hear about this. Anybody who posts on their Instagram story a screenshot or a screen recording of them listening or their favorite part of the show or a freeze frame of me on the YouTube, whatever it is, you tag me on Instagram, I'm reposting it. I never want to do that. I never want to be the person who's just constantly promoting, but I need the people to understand what's happening here on the Spite Tour. We just did Kevin Connolly, 2 hours with him, where he revealed that he like solved a fucking murder as he's talking about the Pussy Posse. He told me afterwards that he's never opened up like that on a podcast. Then we got Sean Evans this week. The following week, probably going to be the biggest interview of the year at Barstool, behind the blog with PFT Commenter. So PFT is going to be an open book. We're not talking about the character. We're talking about Eric. We're talking about the man. And so you get to finally look behind the shades and see what PFT is all about. Paul Verzi, you know him from all his podcasts with Bill fucking Burr. He's dropping his own his comedy special in September. He's on. Trevor Wallace comes through with his millions of fucking viewers and fans. Annie Letterman, Chris DiStefano, Rosebud Baker, Danny Lopriori, Ryan Sickler, Robbie Berger, Taylor Tomlinson, Ryan Long. I mean, it is the who's who lineup of comedians and comics. And they're all coming through for like an hour doing like real conversations. It's such good shit. I'm so fucking proud of it. It's probably like the best, highest quality work I've done in the last, you know, in my decade plus career. So Spite Tour rolls on, and I would appreciate anybody who helps promote it and support it, post about it. And like I said, everybody's getting retweets and reposts. If you show me some love, we're also going to have some merch on the way and you know, everything else that goes along with blowing up a new series. Like I said, if it was a new person, it would be, I feel like, the talk of the town at Barstool. But you know, when you're the old dog, it kind of gets lost in the mix. So let's make sure that people are understanding what's happening here with phase two of the Spite Tour. So Sean Evans coming up. at the back end of this podcast. But first, we got to talk about a lot of this weekend had shit going on that I think interestingly falls under the same umbrella. So we're talking Kanye, we're talking Jake Paul, we're talking about a lot of the entertainment going on in the world today. It's brought to you by Bird Dogs. I just got a care package of Bird Dogs here. I mean, they're just flat out the most comfortable shorts in the world. The way you can get me in shorts is by making them comfortable and stylish. Look at this. I looked them inside out for you can see the built-in underwear. I don't know why Bird Dogs were the only geniuses to figure it out, but it's like when you were growing up, you had shorts with the built-in underwear and they decided to make it a fucking net, a weird like rope net. What the fuck was that about? Everybody in the world hated that because you had this like elastic around your thighs, digging into your fat thighs, and then a rope net. So when you sat down, your ass and your balls were getting like eaten up by a rope. I remember I would get like the lines on my skin because I had rope underwear on. Why? Everybody in the world instantly cut those things out. And then Bird Dogs came along and were like, how about we make it this fucking awesome, like silky material that feels amazing. And it's like, oh yeah, who knew? That's better than a goddamn rope. So I got the black pair here. They're not just shorts. They've got the long pants. These pants right here, it's like part khaki, but thinner than your average chino. A little more like stylish, yet comfortable. Feels like the same material of pants that I have from Theory, which are like $200 a pop. So you got the pants as well. I got the shorts here, which are almost like a linen, of course, with the built-in as well. And then they got a pair of joggers here. If you're into like the athletic, no built-in underwear on these, but like, you know, full-blown athletic pants. So they got like everything that you need to be comfortable and be stylish. They sent me a box that said that a quote from one of their founders said they had been to the future and that everybody in the future has sex robots and pants with built-in underwear. And so we're living in the future already with the Bird Dogs. We just got to catch up to those sex robots. Maybe that's what Bird Dogs should do. Last time they were running a promotion where if you bought their shorts, you got a free pair of nunchucks. Now they're running a special where you get a whistle football. Shout out to like the Vortex from the 90s. When you go to birddogs.com, promo code Clancy, you get the whistle football. How about the next promo, you send a sex robot? You want to talk about getting some new customers for dogs? Be like, oh, look at this. Shorts, built-in underwear, also sex robot. Comes right to your door. Promo code Clancy. Just think about it. I don't know the cost. I don't know the margins. I don't know the liabilities. Just would like to let you know sex robots would put asses in the seats. And those asses would be comfortably held in place by Bird Dogs shorts with the underwear in it. So it's comfortable. Your dick isn't popping out. Like the problem right now, you know, you wear your favorite pair of shorts or sweatpants with no underwear. And, you know, everybody in the world can see whether you're circumcised or not. No one's trying to see that thing just flopping around, hanging to the left. But you got the built-in underwear. Keeps everything in place while being comfortable. It's just straight up like they stole Lululemon's designer and made this shit affordable and comfortable. So go to birddogs.com. Enter promo code Clancy. Get yourself a whistle football like the Nerf Vortex from the 90s along with your comfortable shorts, pants, whatever, and you can have yourself a Sunday. We're still working on those sex robots. We'll let you know about it, though. But this weekend, Kanye drops Donda, finally. Sunday morning drop, which makes sense considering he's on his God shit. After the 3 or 4 listening party extravaganza, rebuilding the home in the middle of the arena, having this girl who looked a lot like Kim Kardashian stand there as his bride. He lights himself on fire. He made $12 million selling, which, by the way, I don't think is that much. Everyone was like, he made $12 million off of an album that's not already out. And I mean, I get it. If you're making money a lot, like $12 million is a lot of money to regular people. And for an album that's not out yet, it's, you know, you shouldn't be making any money until the album drops. I understand why people are impressed with it, but like $12 million is just not that crazy for a guy like Kanye, who's throwing around billions and talking about, you know, owning companies and shit. I thought people were geeking out over that number, like it was, you know, $120 million. But He kind of redid the game as far as how you drop an album, how you roll it out. I'm sure everyone is going to be following suit, trying to do their own listening parties. And he's the master of, like, you know, he's got this drama with DaBaby on Jail Part 2, where at first it came out, you know, blocked out. You couldn't listen to it on Spotify until they got the clearance. Part of me is like, I don't even know if these things are real. He's posting conversations and screenshots where it's like, you know, he's defying the record label, and there's always some drama, and it's always very public. And I don't know whether it's real or part of the, you know, PR rollout, but either way, it's all fucking genius. And there's no denying that. So Donda drops, everybody's like, where's, you know, give me your review. What's your review? You know, I've been talking about his beef with Drake and how they were going to go head to head with albums. We're talking about a potential battle with him and what I think about all of his music. And I'm at the point where I get, you know, I understand people want to know what I think about it, but I'm at the point where Kanye, I finally just conceded. He's just not for me. Donda isn't, you know, it's not Jesus is King, which is one of the worst albums I've ever heard in my life. But I only like a couple tracks off it. I like the one with the Lauryn Hill sample, like no surprise there. There's a song on it that sounds a lot like, you know, 90s music with a regular beat, regular chorus, a sample of a familiar, you know, voice that I know. I like that one. I like the song with Kim, the one that he like dedicated to Kim, or I think it's very much assumed to be Kim, Lord, I Need You. It's got like, you know, a nice, he's like doing that sing song Kanye thing, not auto-tuned. I like when Kanye just sings his regular voice and spits like a regular rap verse. And it actually was like very heartfelt and cute, but sad in a way, because he's like breaking up with her. Like, I think anybody who's divorced or going through a breakup can like listen to those lyrics and feel something. Jail, you know, obviously with Jay on the hook, and then DaBaby's Part 2. I hate to admit it, especially as an old school rap guy, but I feel like DaBaby kind of came out on top of that one. Rare that Hove goes head to head with someone verse for verse and doesn't come out on top, but DaBaby did his thing. But I mean, the rest of it, it's like, you know, 26 or 27 songs. A big chunk of them are about God, and I just don't like that. I never really liked the heavily auto-tuned weirder songs, like the unique songs. And I think that's what what's hard for the old school rap fans to deal with new school Kanye and new school rap in general. There's a lot of like, what the fuck? That element is what I think throws a lot of people off who came from the original Kanye and old school rap, where it's just like every song was within the same range. You know, there's like, it was hip hop with a beat and a hook and some verses and some rhymes. And sometimes you were spitting double time, and sometimes you were spitting slow, and sometimes it was choppy, and sometimes it was smooth and multi-syllabic, and sometimes it was simple. But it was all like within just like rap and hip hop. And Kanye has, you know, gone on to this new genre that is like all to himself of, you know, weird, like electric guitar, synth, strange noises with him like screaming with a gospel in the background and like weird repetitive sounds. I don't know. And it like for people like my age, we're just kind of like, what the fuck was that, man? And I guess on some level, I think there are the Kanye stans who love him no matter what. And then I think there are music fans who appreciate that he like goes out on a limb and tried something new and evolved as an artist. But I think music is one thing where, you know, you like what you like, and you get a sound, you get attached to a sound, the music that you listen to when you're like, I think the age is something like 14. They say when you develop your musical style, you know, it's not what your parents are playing for you anymore, and you're new and you're picking out your own sound and music. And that's when you decide what you're into, and you know, your life is good. So you're listening to music when you're like, you know, out in the backyard playing with friends, and life is good. And so that's the kind of music you enjoy. And you can kind of grow and change, if you will. And then the artist changes and you decide if you like it or not. And the way Kanye has grown, it's just not for me. I don't need, you know, you don't need to hear my review, because I don't think this music is for me anymore, even intended for me anymore. Where people lose it kind of is music is the one thing where if you don't like something, you proclaim it bad. And I think That's also what I run into a lot when people get frustrated with me because they say I hate everything. I'm known as the Barstool hater, that I'm always trying to put things down or be contrarian. Just because I like it doesn't mean I think it's bad. In a lot of cases with certain Kanye songs, I have definitely been like, this sounds bad, like weird Yeezus stuff and some of the really out there shit he did in his weird gospel music. I will flat out call that bad. Don does something where it's like, I can, you know, we had a lot of good features and people are really feeling it. And I understand that people like it. And I don't think it's, you know, to me, it's not enjoyable. I think it's bad. I'm not saying it's like poor quality though. And a lot of times that's what I'm saying is like, I don't like this. That doesn't mean that I hate the person who created it or think that they're lazy or bad. But music is one thing where people feel comfortable saying, if I don't like it, that means bad. Whereas every other form of entertainment or art, you kind of have the understanding of like, I don't like opera and that fat lady singing, but opera's not for me. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's bad. I don't even know what makes opera good or bad. It's like when I'm watching the Olympics and I see some gymnast do some move or some figure skater. And I'm like, holy shit, that was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And you hear the announcers be like, ooh, that's going to cost her everything. She's done 4 years down the drain. It's like, oh fuck. I don't know what I'm talking about here. This is not for me. And so, you know, I'm going to check out. So same thing with the ballet, opera, you know, art, paintings and sculptures and things that are Broadway, things that are probably considered a little more niche and highbrow. You know, you just kind of have the perspective really to be like, this is not for me. I'm not one of these people. So it's just not, it doesn't matter what my opinion is, but music, everybody consumes music and a lot of it. So they feel like they are qualified to say what's bad and good as opposed to what I like and don't like. And, you know, that's probably not true either. It's like if you look at a painting on the wall, you could be like, I don't know, that fucking thing looks weird. But I don't know, maybe it took a million hours to paint and it's really impressive for reasons that are above my head. So I'm just going to not weigh in on this. You know, Donda definitely has, I'm sure, you know, original music and things that we haven't seen before and features from really great acts and all this shit that, you know, I'm not saying it was poorly made or rushed or of low quality. I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't enjoy it. And you know, for the people who do, go on, rock on. Same thing with like the Jake Pauls of the world. The internet is another place where people feel that they can say, I don't like this thing, so therefore it is bad. Whether it's TikTok or YouTube or Vine or any of the up-and-coming type of like entertainment on the internet where it's not really for you. It's intended for like teenagers or young people, people on the cutting edge, people like not the, you know, yuppies who are working or the family men and women or people who are older. It's not for you. It's not bad. Some of it's bad. I mean, some of that shit, of course, is objectively bad where it's just like this is dumb clickbaity nonsense, but some of it is like really well edited and really like well done, and it appeals perfectly to its demographic. And Jake Paul and the Paul brothers, you hear that all the time. I mean, at what point do you have to at least concede that whether or not you like it or not, it is a dominant force in entertainment for a reason? You know, you don't get to fight Floyd Mayweather without doing something that's wildly popular and impactful. And Jake Paul is, you know, you don't like him, but what he's doing business-wise, marketing-wise, is fucking undeniable. You don't have to like his vlogs. And he doesn't even like his vlogs and shit like that. He's moving on to new shit. Probably very similar in a way to Kanye's music. I mean, dare I compare Kanye West to Jake Paul? But in a way, they both like don't give a shit about their old stuff and they're moving on to this new, you know, new style, new entirely different way to entertain. And there are people who fuck with it like undyingly. And for the people who don't, because they're listening to a lot of music, but because they're on the internet all the time, it also happens in TV and movies. It's like, I watch a ton of movies. I know what's good and what's bad. So I can say that, or it's really more like, No, it's just something that you don't like. That's not for you. The Green Knight. Holy shit. The Green Knight. That was the worst fucking movie I've ever seen in my goddamn life. But I see a ton of people saying how great it is and how well made it was. I mean, for me, when I see a movie that's shitty that people are loving, it's always because it's well made and always because of like the technical aspect. That's how I know the actual movie, the plot, characters, dialogue, that all sucks is usually when you have to focus on like what it looks like. But I think I've just reached a point where I've been around long enough and I've screamed and yelled long enough about my own opinions that I think I've just come to realize that not, you know, not everything needs to be declared one way or the other, good or bad. And that's probably not the best thing for the way we've done our content here at Barstool. But I mean, just like everyone else that I'm discussing here, trying to kind of evolve and change the way I entertain and the way I do things is like, we probably made a name for ourselves coming up. Cause when I was like a young, dumb 25-year-old, I had an opinion on absolutely fucking everything. And if you disagreed with me, you were wrong. You're an idiot. I'm smart. I'm big. You're little. I'm smart. You're dumb. I'm right. You're wrong. And that's what, you know, led to a lot of followers and controversy and people who really ride with you. Cause I was passionate all the time and ready to argue and fight. And I'm still passionate about it. But I think after a while, even like with my sports opinions, everything you just start to realize is more about like your perspective on it and not necessarily. And I think also when you meet people or you see more like behind the scenes in the industry, or you see what it takes, like if you know someone who puts out a song or a movie or a show and you're watching it through that lens of like, I know the person and how hard they worked on it and what went into it, you're like, oh, this is pretty good. But if you didn't know that person and know the context, you might just be like, I don't know, this sucks, you know? Learning things like that or looking at things through that lens, I think completely, you know, kind of changes the way you evaluate certain things. So, you know, there was a whole entire genres of entertainment that I knew I wasn't really qualified to speak on or weigh in on. And then there were the things that I was like, oh, this shit, I know I can speak on it and I can declare definitively what it is and what it is not. And then you start to reach a point where you're like, oh, wait a minute, I don't really know what the fuck I'm talking about. You go through life making enough wrong decisions and being wrong or coming up short here, there, and everywhere. And you're like, okay, well, certain things I know, certain things I don't. I can only tell you what I feel and what I know. And that doesn't necessarily speak to the like definitive answer of what, you know, Kanye's music is. I mean, but that goes both ways, right? I think you need the people who love Kanye's music to understand. Those people need to respect when I'm just like, no, man, this is not what I like. Listen to the old music that I liked. And you can hear it's entirely different. It doesn't sound like that anymore. So I don't like that. And don't tell me that it's above me. It's over my head. I don't know when it's just too, you know, it's too smart for me or whatever. No. I fucking get it. I just don't fucking like it. So, you know, I won't sit here and declare somebody a failure or horrible if you don't try to jam it down my fucking throat. But I think that just is, you know, again, comes with like age and failure and getting just straight up fucking tired. Sunday morning, I was like, I just don't want to fight about Kanye on Twitter right now. The Mets, I was like, catch me on the podcast where I can kind of explain that I think both the players and the fans are wrong in the latest Mets controversy, because I can't do a Twitter battle anymore, man. I just can't. I don't have the patience or the fight, you know? And so some people, I'm sure, would want me to just be angry, hater, KFC for the rest of my life. But I don't know if that is sustainable for anybody who's out here on the internet or anybody giving out their opinions. Certain things I'll always for sure get fired up about. But it's just like, how many Kanye albums in a row can I say, nope, I don't like it, and here's why? It's like, at some point, you just got to go, stop listening to Kanye, man. It's clearly not for you. Or Jake Paul, it's like, how many times do I have to tell you? I don't really personally like the guy, but I respect everything he does as a businessman and an entertainer and a creator. Bam. Like, that's just it. So every single fight, I'm going to say, hey, he's a pretty good boxer. And I understand that he didn't fight a professional boxer, but what he's doing is pretty goddamn impressive. Can't we meet somewhere in the middle ground? People should be allowed to dislike things without it meaning too much. You're allowed to hate things. You're allowed to dislike things. And that doesn't mean that you are casting, you know, some like judge, jury, and executioner type sentence. Just let me live and let me do what I like and not do what I like. And that doesn't need to be, doesn't mean that you have to take offense to it or defend whatever person you're sticking up for. You know what I mean? And then there's guys like Sean Evans who are just, nobody dislikes Sean Evans. He's just that dude who everybody enjoys. Everybody gets a kick out of. And we've got him now on the Kevin Clancy Show. If you do debate and argue and need answers and information and statistics, you can use the Cast app. Cast allows you to cast your question, put it out there for the people, and then they answer it. And then you get all, you know, do you like Donda? Yes or no? Is it better than this album? Which, you know, order Kanye's albums from best to worst. Do you like Jake or Logan Paul? You put out questions like this on the Cast app, and it compiles all of the answers, gives you all the information you need, allows all of your fans and followers to vote, share their honest opinion, and you get an instant snapshot of what everybody thinks. They are on a mission to take all the bystanders of the world who are just watching and reading on social media, become a part of the conversation, become active participants. It's all done anonymously, so you don't have to worry about outing yourself with whatever you're saying. So it's real opinions anonymously. And as soon as you vote, you can see all of the other information, all the other voter results categorized by age, gender, location, all of that to see how your opinion compares to the followers, compares to the person who put the question out. It's real-time results, and it's free to download right now for Android or Apple. So you can download Cast on the app or Play Store. Look for the purple C when you are searching for the app. Download it, click the notes, or you can go to joincast.co and download it today to see how people truly feel about these trending topics, who's right, who's wrong, who's good, who's bad. And once again, it doesn't mean that you're wrong or he's right. It means that you have an opinion that you want to share for whatever reason. That shit is valid either way. So download Cast and let's listen to Sean Evans. Man, we've been doing these 1 minute man videos, and now that Reels it can go up to 60 seconds.
It's made for the platform.
It's just like the views on Reels are so much better than regular posts. It's crazy.
Really?
It's
I don't know anything. All I guess do it just is gets just
caught
go
up in the fucking, you know, the Reels machine, like TikTok, and just goes.
You know, Kevin, is the carousel thing. They're rewarding the fuck out of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. I never ended up posting that because I still didn't quite understand what you meant by it. But
you post a photo first, and then you just attach the video after, and it shows up like two or three.
Oh, okay. That's what I didn't understand.
It'll keep popping up on people's feeds.
Because it's almost like a new post every time. Fucking gotta game the system, man.
Dude, I don't know shit.
I was gonna say, do you do any of that, or you just like record it and then they take care of it?
Yeah, I don't fucking. And I don't know. I don't feel like any. I'm always like, none of that shit fucking works. Like just YouTube.
Dude,
like I'm always like that. It's like,
bro,
nobody has ever been like, dude, you're the guy from Reels. Like, nobody ever has said that to me in my fucking life. So I just am like,
it's funny, though, how much, like, you know, I was, are we rolling?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it, let's go.
Okay.
The amount of times I've been told, like, if you tell people to rate, review, and subscribe to your podcast, like, they do it. It works. And I just hated doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I felt like I was pandering and begging. So I just, like, wouldn't do it. And then, like, this guy eventually was like, you fucking have to do it. Like, you're making this a less successful product, but I'm like, but I don't sound cool. Like, I seem annoying if I do it, you know?
But it's then
like,
it.
You gotta.
But then it.
And it works, man. Yeah, it does work. And then all these little tricks to the system, all these little, you know, the algorithms and shit. I mean, I feel like Hot Ones is so perfect because it's got a good hook for, like, for people, just in, like, the entertainment value, but it also fits the YouTube model.
Yeah.
Everything and the names you get. I mean, it's like designed to blow up, and that's exactly what it's
done,
right?
The reactions with it, I think, is then how you can have those memes that break containment, like
huge.
The Shaq or the Paul Rudd thing or the Idris Elba thing, and then those become like bigger than the show itself.
Absolutely. When you get into that, like, you just become a GIF or just become a, you know, a little clip that people can reuse whenever. I mean, yeah, the Paul Rudd, like, how many times have people maybe never even watched that episode? Some people might even not even know
what Hot Ones
is.
And they just do that.
Look at us, you know, anytime it fits the conversation they're having. Do you know when you're getting a moment like that? Are you like, oh, this Paul? Oh, yeah. Like,
that's, even have like a story about the Paul Rudd thing. So I actually ran into him like months later. And that was the first thing that we talked about.
Yeah.
You know, where we were like, hey, you know that look at us, who would have thought, not me thing? Did you expect that to be a thing? And he was like, I didn't remember that the second I walked out of the door.
It's so, you know, harmless. It's like it wasn't like a delivered line.
Yeah, it's just
it
kind of like the throwaway thing. Yeah. So, but
whatever.
But then it just takes off. And he, because he's not on social media, he was like, dude, people are like, look at us on the street. I had no idea what anybody was even talking about.
Now, that's funny to think about. If you don't know that that's going viral and everyone's just screaming at like, you, look at us,
who would have thought?
Like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
It's weird.
But isn't that so perfect? It's like, that's kind of just like a microcosm for this whole game, man. Like, when you're not trying and when you're just being natural and just riffing, like, the good shit comes.
Yeah.
If he was like, all right, dude, all right, so like halfway through, I'm going to be like, look at us. Like,
yeah, you know, or if we were trying to set up those moments, if we were trying to set those up, they'd always brick. But that's what's cool. Like, just people kind of decide what sinks and swims on the internet,
I
guess.
Yeah, it really is the great, like, equalizer where it's like, and I hate that sometimes because, you know, sometimes it's like, sometimes I'm sitting there like, the fucking guy eating chicken wings is the biggest fucking thing on the internet. What the hell?
Yeah, or I always look at it, where, like, sometimes you'll be like, oh, my God, like, people are going to love this.
Yeah.
And you put it out and nobody cares. And then there's other times that you're like, this is it. This is the grand slam. Like, can't wait to present this to the world, whatever. Nobody cares. And then there's times where you're like, I'm just going to put this out. And
like, I hope it gets under the radar. Like, yeah.
And then people are like, blow it up.
That's the fucking one.
There's no point in trying to figure it out.
And I don't think, like, you'd figure, you know, after I've been doing it for, like, 11 years now, I have a gauge, you know, a little bit of the pulse, but like you still can't figure that out. You know?
No, you'll
and I don't think anybody can. If you can figure that out, then you're like, that's it. Then you've reached the nirvana of the internet. You know what I mean? The pinnacle of it all. But that's what's kind of like frustrating about it. But that's what's cool about this game is like, you never know. That's how like new people can break in. Doesn't matter.
Just we're all Plinko balls, just ding 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 going through.
That is the perfect way to describe it. You're just hoping to hit that $10,000 spot. You know, yeah.
Big money.
Did you ever expect
to be a chicken wing talk show host? Yeah, like when I was a kid, I was like, I want to be a firefighter. I want to be a baseball player. No, I think like you just. Kind of, I knew what I want. You know, I was a broadcast journalism major in college, so I knew in some way that I wanted to do this sort of thing. University of Illinois in Champaign. Mm-hmm. And then, and so I kind of knew that I wanted to do it, and I was obsessed with radio personalities like Howard Stern growing up. I'd listen to Loveline every single night at 10.
Yeah.
That was just like appointment, like a religious viewing.
Dude,
sort
that
of
was
experience.
It was like Howard Loveline, Howard Stern.
David Letterman, for me.
But all on the E! Channel, there was like that, Howard Stern, and then Wild On with Brooke Burke. And that was like...
What an era.
Before free internet porn, that was it for like a teenage kid, man.
Hell yeah. So I always knew that I wanted to do it, but then, you know, but then you just kind of end up like that Plinko Ball thing where none of the dots connecting them looking forward makes sense, only looking back. So I don't know. It's just like a series of bizarre coincidences and... Never had that as a thing that I thought I would ever do. Or, you know, even when I was in college, to me, like working at 670 The Score, like ESPN 1000, or one of those local sports stations in Chicago, to me, I think like if I would have gotten that, I would have felt like I made it.
That
or
was
something.
It for me.
Yeah.
Here at WFAN here in New York was like the goal, the dream. I still hope to like maybe like one day land there when I'm like done being an idiot on the internet and I just want to like talk sports or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a nice little landing spot. But, that was, you know, for sure the dream. And then, you know, it's funny that you, like, so you say, like, I didn't expect it or plan for it, but you did, you know, you went to school for that.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm always laughing when Addison Rae caught all that heat for the UFC thing.
Right, right.
And people were like, I went to school and I don't have a spot. I laughed at people being like, your degree means fucking nothing. You're not owed shit just because you went to school for it. It, you know, sometimes your degree literally means nothing where you end up. But it is interesting that, like, so you were kind of doing the broadcasting thing in college. I did the same thing at Fordham at WFUV. Who are we just talking to that did, that also went to school?
Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff D. Lowe. He like, studied it at Penn State, and it's like, it does kind of get the ball rolling a little bit if this is where you want. Like, a lot of people always ask me, how can I do this? And it really is, like, Plinko, it's up to luck of the draw. But if you go to a good school where that shit is, there's a good program for that, it does put you in the right direction.
Definitely. I think about all the different things that happened in my life that sharpen certain skills and even jobs that I had that seemed meaningless that I look back now and were all integral into the journey. You know, I used to do architecture tours of the Chicago River where I was just stacking those things all summer long.
Look to your left over here.
Literally Vince Vaughn in The Breakup that was shot on the same boat that I used to work on. All of that stuff. Yeah. But I always think, those summers gave me so much time to figure out the cadence or the storytelling or connecting with an audience. And then you just stack five of those a day all summer long, you know, doing 20 a week or whatever it was, sometimes 30 a week all summer. And then doing that 5 or 6 years, I think about all of that. I think about going to broadcast journalism school and learning all the fundamentals and the editing and all that goes into that. Or being obsessed with radio growing up and how all of those things kind of blend together in a smoothie to give you whatever skill set. And then even working cubicle jobs, writing press releases and stuff like that. I needed that experience too. So people probably look at you and are like, how do I do it? But it is that sort of a 10-year long process of building that skill set, building that confidence, and it being sort of a like an in total of your life that kind of leads to those
things. It's like, even I'm doing right now, I'm doing something that's going to help me like in 10 years. Like, it never stops. You're just always
going. No.
And it's the corniest thing, but it's one that I just recently kind of had the epiphany when I started with One Minute Man, realizing that like there's no such thing as failure. There's only like experience. And I always thought that was kind of like, yeah, whatever. But it is like that was something that I did in a different form that I kind of put to bed for a while and then just like revamped it when, you know, certain things with Instagram changed. And I just had it on deck. I had it like in the holster ready to go because I've been doing this shit for so long. I really started to believe that and the whole 10,000 hours idea where it's just like if you just keep doing it, it becomes natural. And then when you become natural, you have more time to think about how you're going to be funny or interesting while you're talking, you know. And those two things I think are invaluable. Like you would never think that doing the boat tours mattered. It's some Miyagi shit.
Right.
It's some Karate Kid shit. You're doing, you wax on and wax off on the boat, and you don't realize it, but it absolutely helps. So that's like when people are always like, "How do I do it?" I'm like, "Okay, well, first of all, start in a different field 10 years early, and then you know, do this, that, the other thing, and then you're maybe ready to start." You know?
Yeah, I always tell people because people are like, "I want to do that." And I'm like, well, what exactly do you want to do and why do you want to do that? You have to answer those questions for yourself to figure anything out. And then I always think, but just get a job and see if you can make 10% of your life that year that thing. And the next year, try to make it 20%. The next year, try to make it 30%. The next year, try to make it 40%. Because too often people just be like, I want that thing. How do I do that thing? But it's
you
a complicated
have, like, a
process
that you build. Yeah. I remember doing that at Deloitte when I was an accountant where I did like, it was probably like 80-20. I did accounting work and then blogging. And then, like, the next year was probably 30 and 40. And, like, 4 or 5 years in, it switched to where blogging was taking over. And they were kind of like, your work is garbage. Like, what's going on? They had no idea. And that's kind of when you know you're ready to, like, go all in
jump
on something
into,
when it becomes the majority of your life that you're actually, you know, putting it into. It's funny that you say that, though, because it is. I've always thought there's a clear divide between people who had real jobs first and
cartoon jobs.
Yes. Because like, I mean, I do a lot of shit here and probably too much. And you know, people are like, and there is some level of burnout for sure. A lot of talking, a lot of camera time, all that. But when people are like, you know, aren't you tired? Or like, you're working so hard. I'm like, bro, come on.
I'm not a roofer.
I'm talking a lot. I'm not working hard. You know, we're recording dumb jokes like all day long. Sure. There's a lot of hours, but I'm not working hard.
Yeah, I always think that in media because, you know, you do hear about that burnout and people doing that all the time. And you know how in Israel they make you join the military?
Yeah.
I always think, like, in media they should make you work as a roofer for a year or work in a slaughterhouse for a year or something.
Yes.
Because the amount of
1,000%
belly aching and complaining relative to, well, you show up at 9:30 with a Starbucks in your hand in an air-conditioned office is just insane.
It would. I mean, it goes such a long way where your whole frame of mind just switches to like, oh, this is not hard, you know?
Yeah. The internet can drain you though. You know, there's some stuff.
And then I have the flip side where I've argued the exact opposite of this when we are putting out a shit ton of stuff, when you're going viral, you're not as controversial, so this is probably not a problem for you, but I, you know, every couple months I'm
in the
blender
mud.
For like, yeah, I'm in the mud for something I said and that really weighs on you, and you got people coming at it's the tides, waves of people just coming at you, you know, coming at your neck for personal stuff. And so I always said, we're the internet coal miners.
You know, when people say, like, you're not a coal miner, it's not hard. I'm like, you're right. But within this internet world, what we do is we're at the bottom. We're in the trenches fucking fighting for our lives. And so in this digital world, we are kind of, like, our brains are getting fried the same way that, you know, it is, like, manual labor out there in the hot sun. We're the internet version of that. So I think it is, it's not easy.
You know? See humanity through a bizarre warped lens,
oh, I'm
I guess.
Totally
yeah.
warped by now, bro. I think we all are. How old are you?
35.
Yes, I'm 36. We're like right in that same generation. We're fucked. Like,
we never be the same person.
You know, I'm so grateful that we knew a little bit of life before
the
this
90s,
whole thing.
The last of the great decades.
My man. Yep. But once that digital revolution or whatever you want to call it happened, gone. Everybody's fucked. You know. I'm in the shower with my phone. Like, you know, I'm wet while I'm like putting out a tweet. I'm like, what the fuck, man? It just completely warped your whole perception. That imagine growing up with just that.
No, yeah, I can't imagine.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, you guys are. You have no shot. No shot of being normal, man. So when Hot Ones, like, what was your main gig before Hot Ones like blew up?
So I was working at Complex, just packaging interviews, but just in more of a classic sense, no wings involved. But I was working with First We Feast, and then the editor-in-chief of First We Feast, creator of Hot Ones, Chris Schoenberger. In 2014, everybody in our industry was doing that pivot to video thing. So we had to come up with a video product, and, you know, we were small. We were just like a little brand, a little owned and operated in the larger context of a big hulking publisher, so there was nobody that really cared about what we were doing or was thinking about what we were doing. We were just in a corner, basically, in a lab without much supervision, which I always think, looking back now, was so valuable to us. But what we saw was, being in the office, just as I'm sure it's the same way here, is you'll see people walking the halls. You'll see celebrities walking the halls. So we knew that we had some proximity to celebrity, so maybe a celebrity interview show would be viable. That was, I thought, a needle that we could thread.
They're just coming through Complex in general for whatever whatever else they got going.
I'm like, the face-to-face access already exists. Mm-hmm. It's just about having some sort of vehicle for it. So we thought a celebrity interview show could be viable, but then we were like, celebrity interview shows are so boring. How do we make them not boring?
Right.
So we were just trying to solve for that. And then he said, well, what do you think of an interview show where we interview celebrities but have them eat increasingly spicy chicken wings over the course of the interview?
He just had that right off the bat.
Yeah.
It wasn't like there's a first iteration where we're trying like...
No, and then the way... When he said that, it just was like a Cupid's arrow into my brain. Mm-hmm. I was like...
Isn't it funny how one... idea like that. For me, with the podcast, it wasn't as creative, but it was more like a logistical thing. My brother, who's my producer, this is 2012, so a long time ago, when Google Voice first was like becoming a thing, he was like, you know, because we didn't have a radio station where we could take calls, but he was like, we can set up this answering machine, and people can just call in and leave a voicemail as their question, and you can play. And I was like, that's all I needed. That after that, I was like, now I have a format here. That's my hook. It's going to be, you know, a call-in show, but, you know, not live. And I never looked back. But I was, like, so resistant until I had that one thing where I really wanted to do it. Because if you go in to something like, all right, we can kind of do this. Like, it's got to
be. No.
The Cupid's arrow is a good way to put it, where it's, like, fall in love with that idea. And you're like, I'm going to make this shit work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's crazy, though, that the Hot Wings thing. You know, I would have thought maybe it starts out, like, what if they eat, you know, it's a hot dog eating contest. How much can they eat? And it's like, oh, but then they can't talk while they're doing it, so we can't do that. So let's try a chugging, you know, whatever it is, and you landed on that. But from Jump Street, you just knew Hot Wings.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. It sounded revolutionary the second that he said it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, let's get in a room and bang out this pilot and try to shoot it as fast as we can. And then 6.5 years later, 15 seasons, a couple hundred episodes, here we are.
And I mean, at the time, you're probably not thinking like, and then we'll sell the hot sauces and we'll have, you know...
No, even that was a mistake. Even that was by accident.
What do you mean?
Well, at first, we thought, you know, if you do something on the internet, you can see that there are views. There are people watching it. You can see their comments, people interacting with you online. But it's all in the ether, you know? So we thought to have an audience that's truly bonded with the show, and we had such a cult audience...
we need to give them something physical that they can touch. So we were like, how do they physically connect with the show? So to us, it just started as like a promo item. We'll make 500 bottles of hot sauce, and fans will probably want to put it on their shelf or try it along. You know, we never thought about the way that people do Hot Ones parties where they get all the sauces. All of these are unintended consequences of the show.
That's how you know it's real, too, though. Is like,
because,
you know... You can do, like, you know, SEO and optimization. And
I don't know any of that
shit. Algorithms that get people.
I've never looked at a Google Analytics sheet in my life.
You're the talent. You are the star. Of course you shouldn't look at that stuff. That's all for the
gut.
Peasants.
All gut. But we made 500 bottles, and then we put them out thinking we'd sell a couple hundred of them, and then we'd have little party favorite things and stuff to hand out to people and guests and stuff. And then they sold out like Adele tickets. Like, it was like, that.
Yeah.
And we were like, whoa. And then because we'd worked with so many craft sauce makers and pepper growers and all these people, and the show was starting to balloon up a little bit, we're like, well, we should leverage this to work with the best makers and then, you know, have these sauces that we put together as a real vision of the show. And that's how the whole hot sauce thing started.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like you're technically, you know, you're a condiment salesman at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
it's bizarre how.
But again, that is really how you
things
know,
branch
because,
out.
Like I was saying, you can have smoke and mirrors where it's like, okay, your video gets a lot of views. Sure. Your website gets a lot of traffic. But when, you know, when we put on a Barstool t-shirt on sale that sells out, or we put out tickets, or you have to physically go somewhere to see these people and they do it, like, that's how you know. So, you know, hot sauce flying off the shelves when you didn't even expect it, it's like, that's how you know there's like a rabid fan base for this.
And that's kind of unique too to your, what you guys do here. Like your media, like I don't think anybody would buy, like, I don't think a kid would buy like a GQ t-shirt and wear it.
There's definitely, we're a little counterculture, a little bit like renegade. That, like, wearing, it was like almost like having a tattoo or something. Like, it's almost like a Fight Club sort of thing. Like, you wear our, you know, the stool and stars, and it was kind of like you're in this little club. And then we got to a point where, like, I got linked in with guys who can, like, just design clothing, you know? So all of a sudden, I'm like, we're talking about our fall drop for, like, hoodies and joggers, just like regular
spring season,
clothes.
21.
Yeah, and I'm like, I am now a clothing designer or what, you know, I don't even know what is happening. But there's, you know, I think the main thing we learned was, like, once you have a fan base who buys into you for one thing, they'll buy into it for a million reasons, you know? It's like, I've started following you for, like, your sports takes, but I'll follow you to the end of the earth for whatever else you're doing.
Yeah, and that's important, too, for audiences, because in entertainment or whatever, you know, whatever people are into and whatever they invest in, whether it's their time or their actual money, those are the things that continue to be there and grow, and then those who don't just kind of go away.
Yeah, so, right. It's just like, see you later. Yeah. It's a test of time. So when Hot Ones starts, like, popping, what was the... Was there an episode or a moment or... Were you like, I know this is like mega now?
So I knew pretty early on that we had a shot, because I think one of the earliest episodes that we ever did was with Machine Gun Kelly. It might have been our second ever shoot. And he was just pacing around the studio and swearing and spitting and doing all this stuff. That,
and this is pre, you know, his new iteration of himself.
Yeah, this is a long time ago. Yeah. And I just, the way that I saw how real everything was, like how chaotic and how real it all was, I thought to myself, we have something special here.
Yeah.
This is a thing that might work. And then, but it wasn't popular at all. You know, we used to joke about it. I used to say all the time to Chris, I used to be like, I'm eating a lot of really spicy chicken wings and nobody gives a shit.
we do like, we call lowering the bar here, where we have to eat like gross shit.
I think,
do these challenges.
Do you guys do a hot sauce one?
Yeah, we've done, we did it with the last day.
The last
we just did like a couple weeks ago. I forgot how hot the last dab was, because we got the promotional shit you're talking about somewhere on our shelves.
I brought some bottles through, right? Yeah.
And I remember, like, some of them were just tasty and weren't, like, setting my mouth on fire. And I must have thought that the last dab was one of those. So I rolled up there. I was like, I'm good. I can do this one. I mean, I've done this. I've had this before. I put it on my meals. And then I was like, oh, nope, never mind. This is the wrong one. But that's more almost like Jackass.
Yeah.
Hot Ones, kind of. Because sometimes we're
dorm room prank.
Painful shit and gross shit and all this stuff. But the host, he does it along with us every time. So, you know, we're drinking some gross liquor from China that's like disgusting, and he's done like 8 or 9 shots of it because he's doing it along with you, shit face. I mean, yeah,
he's in my world, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you guys,
me, Adam Richman, and him, yeah,
yeah.
But then the first episode that broke containment and was big and had lots of views and was on the front page of Reddit and trending on YouTube and stuff was the Key and Peele episode.
Okay.
And then what was encouraging was when that episode went nuts, all the other episodes went up. So like, I was like, oh, yes. This is a cult. Or if people discover the show,
they stick around.
They'll stick around. More. So
it was, you think
that's
that
what
was,
I thought.
Do you know any?
Maybe this could go someplace.
I'm assuming based on your last answer a minute ago, you don't know about the YouTube algorithm and what you're looking
for.
No,
nothing. Like, I don't know any back end thing. I've never looked at Google Analytics. I wouldn't know how to read them or predict anything. To me, I just try to make it as simple as possible. The interview is the oldest construct in the history of media. It's not going anywhere. It doesn't need to be reinvented or anything.
Right.
We have this unique hot sauce hook. So if you can combine those things and make what would independently be what I think some people would consider an excellent interview show combined with this hot sauce thing, then if we can put those together, then I think we can get people to watch it for a long time.
Do you know if like your team thinks about the length of it? And I mean, I'm sure they do because at this point it's a full-blown operation, but like...
Yeah, length early on, I remember there was a lot of people who didn't know what they were talking about looking back on it. When we were just little and we were in this much larger context, there was a lot of poking at it from people above us that were like, nothing works past 6.5 minutes, like da-da-da-da, blah-blah-blah, all this stuff. And I always resisted that kind of feedback, and now that I look back on it, it's just some of the worst feedback we got in the beginning, and we got a lot of it. But so that's always been protected, and I think there's now just a certain process where each individual wing kind of has a little arc of its own, and then when you stack them all together, you get this bigger arc, and that's how these things kind of come out as these pop, like where you can watch a 28-minute video and people will be like, I didn't know that was 28 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah,
they go to a black hole.
That sort of thing, exactly.
Well,
so,
but that's a testament to, that's if your shit is really good.
Yeah.
Because I think if you have, like, okay content, I think you got to play by YouTube rules, try to do the right length, the right, you know, the first 20 seconds has to have a hook that predicts what's going to happen in the relationship, blah, 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 blah. You need all that shit if you're like, this is okay, people will kind of want to watch it, and I really got to, like, hook them with the tricks. If you just have good content, because I've been told, you know, you need to have... You need to have an individual YouTube channel for everything you do. Oh, no, wait. Now you need to put it all into one thing with different playlists. And it's got to be this long or that long. It's got to say this. It's got to say that. And it's like, if you look at the people who are really blowing up on YouTube, it doesn't matter. You look at comedians who put up their hour-long special and then a 10-minute clip and then a 10-second clip.
And then a 3-hour clip, yeah.
And people just like that. And they're like, I fuck with this, so I'm watching all of it.
Right.
And so you do have to, you know, optimize shit for sure. But if you just know you're... content is good, the product is good, it's like the rest of that is like,
yeah,
okay, I don't want to go against it, but I don't need to worry about it.
And if Chris were here, he'd say like, yeah, you don't read that shit because I read it for you.
Yes,
you know,
I'm
he would
sure
say something like that.
He's probably like, you motherfucker, I'm doing, you
yeah
know,
yeah,
that's his art form.
Yeah,
and we're like, yeah, I don't know, we just
yeah,
put it out
it's
there,
some bullshit, I don't think it matters.
You did mention earlier your cadence. I think there's definitely something to the way you talk and interview. Is that something you're conscious of, or is that just the way you talk?
No, I mean, I think I take when I'm writing a question, the syntax, the rhythm, the word choice, I take all that seriously.
Yeah, so you already answered yes, because I don't think most people are thinking about word choice and syntax and rhythm. I think it's just like, I don't know, I'm going to ask them this question.
Yeah, I think, so for me, the way that all started is it just started as kind of a writing exercise where I just wanted to make sure every question that I was writing had purpose, so I'd contextualize it and then land it.
Mm.
But that just started as just a way that I could make sure I wasn't just filling out my 10 questions, you know, which I think a lot of people do.
For sure.
So I was like, all right, make sure I have purpose, and started that way. But then I started including it in the show because I found it really worked with guests to meet you halfway, because ultimately I think every interview, especially in the celebrity circuit, depends on the generosity of the person that you're interviewing, because they don't owe
how
you anything, especially like when they're on this press circuit or whatever.
Yep.
So I was always just of the mindset. Well, then once I started, you know, once the answers, I felt like, oh, well, if you're asking this with a purpose, I'll put a little bit more behind it. Then I noticed what also helped with it is for the audience, because like I said, Hot Ones has this cult audience where they're watching episodes. Sometimes, like, they don't even know who the guest is. Watching Hot Ones.
Yep.
But this way, if you contextualize the question and then land it, the audience can follow along without having to know everything about the career. Yeah. That's kind of how that started. And then thinking about the rhythm of it all and the word choice, I think those combined to make it my, like, sort of nebulous, long, fucking weird questions.
Do you ever, like, scrap, you know, you have 10 questions, certain things you want to talk about, and by the first or second answer the person has given you, you realize, like, oh, we're going off the deep end, like, fuck all this other stuff we're talking about, whatever. Or have you, I mean, I know you're probably going to name names, but have there been ones that are just, like, duds, like, this guy's giving me nothing, this chick won't even
you do a couple hundred, and then, you know, sometimes you think to yourself, I think Seth Meyers told me this one time, but I always think, like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel, where he's like, sometimes you'll be talking to somebody and be like, like, this usually goes better.
Yeah. Like, what is happening here that it's usually not like this?
Yeah, like, so sometimes you'll have that thing, and then definitely, then while that's happening, but also, too, sometimes somebody comes in and you have kind of a choose-your-own-adventure in the interview, like the way that it's designed, where I'll usually have some sort of thesis question, 3 or 4 follow-ups, or maybe we gamify something or whatever. You'll have all this stuff, and then if it's going really well, then maybe you'll push it a little bit, and the stuff that maybe you'd go, okay, I'm going to scrap it because it's not worth it if a guest comes in super guarded, then maybe you'll kind of go there. With the Matt Damon episode recently, for example, I had 2 different Wing 10s, and the one that we used on the show was asking him to name 4 movies that he thinks best defines his career in acting, right? Mm-hmm. Which is borderline overstep, you know, like, yeah, you know, that's a lot to,
for them to come
for a lot.
Spot,
or we had Justin Timberlake on, we had him rank his albums, but like, I only went there with those because everything else was going
falling
so good,
yeah,
that I'm like, well, I think I can take this swing here,
yeah.
But I always have a backup in case it's not going so good,
yeah, they don't want to talk about themselves,
yeah, then I'm not gonna just at the end have some flaming hoop on fire that I ask him to jump through,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
so that's how it goes. You know, sometimes you'll be like, oh, this is going better than I expected. I bet I can crank this up a few notches. Or if it's like, all right, this person's guarded, not given much, then you'll find a kind of a softer way to handle them.
I would imagine these days you're getting much more of, this is going pretty well, let me push the envelope, right?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be such a thrill for us if somebody came in and you'd even heard of the show.
Right.
You know,
yes.
T-Pain coming in the first time, like, I watched the show, we were
amazing.
Like,
amazing.
What?
That
You've
is
seen our show?
So
like,
good.
Like
yes.
That?
That's and truly then, when I feel like, you know, it happened with me with 1 Minute Man, where we'd be doing a podcast interview, and as soon as the Zoom goes on, oh, 1 Minute Man, I know you're shitting. I'm like, what?
Yeah, and
what?
Then that'll make this easier, because it's just a trust exercise at the
because,
end of the day.
And I mean, I'm sure in the beginning, I'd imagine there's been a couple people who, like, the publicist is like, just, you know, do this thing, it's cool. And they're like, I'm going to do what? I'm going to fucking eat it. What do you mean? And then it goes well. I mean, once there's enough social proof and all, every celebrity entertainer sees, well, everyone else does it and loves it, so I'm going to go in. And it's just different from your regular press junket tour where it's like the blah, 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 morning show questions. So now they come in and it's like they want to do it. I feel like celebrities and entertainers and whatever wanting to do an interview is like 90% of the battle. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nobody
like, okay,
yeah.
Now we can have some fun with it because you're not just like, I got to be here to push this shit.
Right.
It's part of my contract. It's like, I want to do this.
Yeah, and who wouldn't rather be on a beach or something? But I think early on, definitely, because, you know, our setup with the black curtains and whatever, that all just started because we had no budget,
nothing.
Like nothing to work with. And but it's ended up being kind of an advantage for us because we can just pop this thing
definitely,
up wherever.
Man.
You
yes,
know, we'll just like rent a suite at the hotel and pop it up. And if they're doing like a junket downstairs, and just take the elevator upstairs, do Hot Ones for an hour, and then go back to what they're doing.
So easy.
So, but early on, you know, because it's such a freak show ask on paper, and there's these 10 scorching hot chicken wings, and then you, like, get up to the suite, like, what am I doing again? And then it's this bald dude with his wings out and all the hot sauces and, like, this setup that just looks like a budget 80s cable access show, and it was almost, like, embarrassing sometimes,
oh,
you know?
Totally.
And you could see somebody, like, like talk to their like
are
like
we sure we're doing
what
this?
Is it what yes. is this do I have to I eat 10 all of them are we gonna eat all of them then like look at me like we eat all of them like that I'm like yeah well, welcome idea, to man. My show yeah, yeah I'm yeah. sorry about this
right
but then I guess
but now not anymore now not right? I mean, not as is a phenomenon now
not as not a, yeah now it's kind of the reverse of that where if somebody is like I have no idea what I'm getting myself into how does this work that's is rare now is when we first started and T-Pain was like, I know
knew
the show.
It, yes.
Like, that's completely
that's
flipped.
When you know it, yeah.
But I think too, when I look back on those things fondly or what makes me proud of the show is sometimes we've had guests come in with that sort of, I don't know about
skepticism.
This.
Yeah.
And then by like the second wing, their shoulders have dropped
they're
and they're fully engaged in yep. the thing. I think mm-hmm. like Charlize Theron's like a good example of that in the Pantheon of Hot Ones episodes.
And you think that, I mean, that's credit to you, right?
Yeah, or like the magic of the wings or the mean, chemistry of it all.
People
I don't
have
know.
Eaten chicken wings before, and it's not, you know, it doesn't radically change your dinner conversation.
KFC, so, I'll take it.
Yeah,
take
I mean, it. I think it's, I think it really is a testament to, you know, whatever the cadence, the syntax, the word choice, the, you know, the Chicago tours, like whatever it is, it happened, you know, for whatever you do, it makes people relax there. I also think when you get people to focus on something other than what they're saying, you get them not to like slip up, but maybe just say something they, you know, take it a little further than they would, you know, answer a question that ordinarily they'd say, like, I'm going to duck that question. We were doing the Super Bowl week when the Super Bowl was in Minnesota. We rented out a bar. We did our serious radio shows from this bar all day long. And they had those little like lotto like pop tab things, kind of like a scratch off thing from Minnesota, and they got part of my take got like hundreds of them, and every guest came through as they talked, they were just like popping them like, oh, I got a winner, loser, winner, like throw them into piles, and they were so like dialed in on that, and then meanwhile asking them questions like, you know, so what do you think? Do you think that guy's like on steroids or, you know, whatever, asking like, you know, deep questions, and they would just start answering because they were like, oh fuck, what? Where am I? What am I doing? And I think you focus on the wings. You get them sweating. They're you know, when you're really eating something too hot, you're worried about nothing other than like my tongue being on fire.
Right.
And I think it really does lend itself to like.
Plus two, it undercuts. I think two is if you're just sitting in a sterile interview session and you say something that's, you know, can be interpreted one way or is maybe a little controversial or whatever. Yep. That I feel like it gets raised to a different level than when you're just dying on hot sauce. You
yes.
know, if you're sweating through and you're coughing through it and you say something, it almost undermines it in a way that makes that takes the edge
yes.
off of it
you're
a
not
little
like,
bit.
What did he just say? Because it's just
so
a
it is a little
spectacle.
Bit of a safer space for that. And I do think there's something to what you said before, because you know, through doing Hot Ones, oftentimes I'll sit down and do something and they'll be like, so what we want to do with Sean is our cold ones where he tries different ice creams down the thing, you know, different stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And I have found that when that happens, you know, at first I'm like okay, fine, whatever. But then I have found like when that happens, that just another little activity while it is all going on does make me a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, because you're just doing two things at once now, multitasking, and it just happens.
Right.
That's why it's brilliant, man. It's the perfect hook. Do you, because I noticed that Matt Damon was making the rounds everywhere, and he did the one interview where he stepped in it a little bit and had some controversy. I don't think I've ever seen Hot Ones much in the mud. Has there been any, like, did you, like, in an interview with Sean Evans, blah, 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 said,
yeah.
you know, something that's, you know, bad, something that, you know, is going to get canceled, yada, yada, or, you, I mean, I feel like you guys are always kind of above that.
Not in any major sort of shifting way, though. I think, though, you always see your own thing. Like, you always see your own kind of smoke more mm-hmm. so than other people see it or feel it.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, like, one time they were talking about it on Rogan, and I don't remember, I don't want to say too much because I don't remember the specifics. I don't want to get anything wrong. And then people seem to care more than I cared. But there was a thing somebody, some professor or something, put out some academic article about, like, the misogynistic nature of Hot Ones or
oh,
something.
Oh, come on.
Do you remember? I don't know if you
get
remember that. But,
here.
Like,
no,
Rogan
I mean,
was talking about it on Rogan and stuff. So I think there's, like, there you can't do anything you can't really do much that's, you know, if you do anything, if you're out there, if you're anything, you know, people, and the bigger it is or whatever, the more people will latch at certain things turn everything into a controversy or the way things can get bigger or whatever. But overall, I don't really. I'm not like actively participating in it.
No, you're not
some
a gotcha
people,
guy.
You're not, yeah, or like,
you're not trying to stir the pot up.
Or some people leverage one controversy to the next controversy to the next controversy to the next controversy as a way to grow or whatever. But I'm not like that. I'm not on a world takeover sort of mentality, you know. Right. I just like doing my little show and I like doing interviews, and I don't need to be like in the news and in the trending topics. I actually don't want that life at all. So
I was talking to another guy I interviewed for the show, Robbie Berger, and the question was basically like, I was asking, do you like being recognized? Do you like taking pictures? Do you like fame and all that? Like, if you could have all the success, the same opportunities, do what you want to do, and not be recognized, known, famous, whatever, would you do that, or would you like it this way? And he loved it. He was like, I like being, you know.
Yeah.
And it was more heartfelt than that. He was like, I like helping people and knowing me and liking me, all that shit. But to me, like, if I could do all this and never be, you can't. It goes hand in hand.
Right.
But the more you succeed, the more you're known. But, like, if you could be anonymous somehow, I don't know, you do Hot Ones, but then out on the streets, you just look magical. Nobody can tell who you are. Would you prefer that? Would you want to be totally anonymous?
I mean, I don't know. I thought that if there was, like, the mask thing of, like, the last couple of years was, like,
yeah,
I thought,
kind of nice?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Because it almost felt like a switch that you could turn on and off.
Right.
And then, because there is some times where it's nice, because then somebody comes up to you and they say something about the show, or they say something about you, and it's really touchy.
It's good for the ego, it's good for...
Yeah, and they want a picture or something,
soul.
And then everybody kind of walks away from it, feeling a little bit better.
Yes.
And what I find is, in person, the interactions, the things, whatever, they're so much healthier and nicer than maybe they are on the internet or whatever. So I always find it as kind of like a nice balance, where if you exist on the internet and you feel like, wow, like, this is nuts, but then you see in real life, it's a totally different thing. Like, that's a fake world that can be turned on and off, and the real world's a little bit more pleasant to be in. Then, you know, then that stuff is kind of nice, but I guess... And there's never a way that you could do it, but just the ability to turn it on and off. I am at like a really comfortable level. I am so generic looking that nobody is like, oh, he's famous. Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah.
That's a thing. Or like
generic
whatever.
Looking white guys.
Nobody.
Know, stick together.
And nobody's like following me around with cameras and stuff like that. So it's not like anything that's unmanageable. I guess, you know, if you get spotted, you're hungover in an airport, or you timed an edible, or like there's a lot of ways. Or like the other day, I was just coming back from the gym and had stopped at like Target and had stopped at Whole Foods and was just wearing like actually the Throwing Fits athletic shorts and like a t-shirt, and then this kid stopped me on the corner for a picture, and I'm just holding like a Whole Foods bag at Target, and then like three other people just see that kid take a picture, and they're tourists in New York, so then they want a picture. I'm just standing there looking ridiculous, and then I'm like, I don't know where these pictures could end up, and then they can break containment, and then people be like, damn, like, Sean's really, like, going through it. He's down bad. You know, but I'm just not
that could end up like the Daily Mail, like, headline, Hot Ones host, like, you know, going through a rough mental patch.
Yeah,
like,
he really needs to shower, and then I'm just, like, carrying shopping bags.
Is Sean Evans homeless now?
Yeah, just off a workout or whatever. So I guess there are those times where...
You know what's driving me nuts, the new thing that I've been getting? Is people run up on me with FaceTime already going.
Yeah, no, that I don't
like
at all.
And what's up? And I'm like, what? Who? What is that?
Yeah,
what are you,
the camera
you
already
know?
Out thing.
Fucking wacky. That feels like you're in the zoo. Like you're in an exhibit.
Right.
You know, it's like.
Or I'll tell you, this is another thing. Like, have you ever gotten this? Where you'll be out somewhere. And, like, somebody in a group of, like, dudes. I bet you get this. Somebody in a group of dudes.
If it's a group of dudes, yes, I get it.
I just did the quick math on that. I was like, let's say there's five bro dudes sitting at a table. You're at a bar or something. Mm-hmm. One of them knows who you are. The other ones don't.
Yep.
And they're like,
that's the Hot Ones guy. Oh, you haven't seen that show? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, blah, blah. And then one of the other guys who doesn't know you, doesn't know who you are or whatever, comes up to you and like puts his arm around your shoulder and is like, so my buddy over there is a big fan.
I don't even know who you are.
I don't even know who you are. But, so what is this? You do an interview show with chicken wings? I don't get it. Like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like,
it's like, now I have to explain my whole career.
Get the fuck out of my face.
Worst.
Yeah.
Because they feel, because they're not starstruck or whatever,
that they can hug you and touch you and talk to you. But I'm like, I don't know you.
And
dude,
I don't want to explain.
And I find you like even more annoying. I'd rather your buddy who's a fan, can we just do that transaction, like let's get it over with. Take a picture and say hi and shit.
I don't need to explain myself. And also it's a little bit fucking, it's a little bit like disrespectful that you're like, I don't even know what the fuck you do.
And it puts me in a weird spot where I'm like, okay, well now I'm going to,
flex on you.
Oh no, not that. I'll just be like, oh, well, yeah, like how do they want, like, oh dude, like thanks for coming up. So it's an interview show. It's on YouTube. It's called Hot Ones, like blah, blah, blah. Like all of a sudden I have to like explain myself to this fucking guy.
Yeah. Fuck that, man.
That's my least favorite thing.
Yeah, that is tough. I also have been getting recently like a girlfriend or a friend will come over and be like, my boyfriend loves this, like, but he's like just a little like nervous to come up and take the picture. Like, can we do it? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then the guy comes over and he's like, I don't even want to do this, man. But like, you know, but like also like get my good side and like, you know, I don't even want. Literally like saying it multiple times. Like, well, then why are we doing it?
Right.
You clearly want it, and that's fine. But like, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
The amount of like hoops that people jump through in their minds to justify it. It's like, all right, you just want to take a picture.
Yeah, like I like that. Yeah, say hi.
What was like young Sean Evans' life like? Was there like any thought early on that this was, you were gonna stand out or be different or?
Yeah, you know, I guess there was always kind of a thought that maybe I'd think differently than other people or talk a little bit differently than other people, but I never had.
You felt that, or like your parents would tell you that, or teachers saw that?
Yeah, exactly.
What was an example?
But I don't know. Like, I don't know what that meant, but or like how that felt, but. I did feel a little like precocious as a child. You know, I remember like laughing at a hemorrhoid joke that my traveling baseball coach when we were 12 told the team, but like as a way to like make the dads laugh. But
laughed. But you got it. And no one else knew.
And he was like, that's why I like you, Sean. You know, he's like, you're like a little adult kind of. So I think I always had that.
A little ahead of the curve.
Or just like a little kind of grown up at 10 or 11 or feeling that, like feeling a little bit older, or getting the references or the way that I'm talking or the movies that I watched and stuff like that.
Clutch for humor and like interacting, which is kind of the two things you do in a way. Like if you get the jokes, you understand the references, you can talk with the adults and you understand the point of the movie, like that's all coming into play in an interview show.
Yeah, and then I did really enjoy watching late night shows, Letterman at the time especially, and like we talked about being obsessed with radio, and then so I knew kind of that I wanted to do that thing, but I never had any sort of like grand aspirations. I was never my name in lights or I'm gonna move to LA or right, I'm gonna be an actor. Like, yeah. I need to take over the world. I never had any of that.
I mean, I remember what, you know, you made a joke about it before, saying like when you're a little boy, you don't say, when I grow up, I want to be like the wing eating interview guy. But I remember saying I wanted to be a baseball player or a gas man pumping gas because he always had a wad of cash on him. And that was probably my first clue that I was like, I'm about that money, man. I want to make this fucking money, dude. Has there ever been a point where you like sold out on Hot Ones a little bit for the money, or has Complex ever stepped in, or is it always just like I'm doing it my way and that's fucking it?
Yeah, I mean, here's what I think. I used to feel like I was puppet mastering Hot Ones. You know, I used to feel like I was doing something like above it and had control of it, and then it gets to a certain level where you see like, you know, you don't have control in all the different ways that it's commercialized and stuff like that.
There's certain things that you just can't control.
It's not my thing. You know, like I host this show, but somebody else owns it. So you don't really control all the different ways that it gets commercialized and this, that, the other thing. But overall, I think that you stick to the things that work. Like all I really care about
is the interview. And the other side, like, that I would say is, even if people wanted to, like, look at that sort of thing and be like, yeah, Hot Ones used to be better before they started, like, commercialized, before it was on Hulu and they made sauces, like, whatever the fuck people complain about.
That's exactly how they all talk.
Yeah. That's how I hear
that's
it.
That's what I always say,
but the thing is, to our credit, I think we have stayed true to the fundamentals of everything. Like, do you know how much money we could make selling each slot on the hot sauce table every
year?
This
one's brought to you by, this one's brought to you by.
Or just selling this, like, we have to have 10 sauces up there, they're named brands. All of those, we'd give away millions of dollars in free marketing to craft sauce makers every single year. We could easily sell that to the big, like, Tabasco or whatever, just to be like the number two sauce.
You should probably do that, bro.
We could do that. We could, you know, there's
big,
like,
money.
Yeah, a ton of money, and we say no. We keep it sacred. We keep the table sacred.
That's definitely the, like, smart long term.
Like,
but
Popeyes or KFC doing the wings and stuff like that. We've never done that. We never let that conversation ever. We don't entertain that conversation. Do you know me? You know the bags that, you know, and that's not easy when you're in the complex of a publisher to stand up for these things and draw a hard line on these things.
Do you think, though, I feel like there's a way you could cash in on that and not, like, bastardize the whole thing, no?
I feel like that's
a conversation you should have where it's like, all right, Popeyes, we could do this, but you're getting, like, a quick mention at the top and a logo in, like, the bottom corner, and that's it, and it doesn't really change
I think here's what I think. I think, you know, it costs a lot of money to do these things, and you have to be with brands in order to have anything that lasts this long.
Yeah.
But my whole thing is, like, all right, let's sell the sauce reveals, the Q&A, the things that are outside, can, you know, like, sell those things, pre-roll, like, do all those things that, you know, you can make a media property that's actually viable. And then, you know, the episodes have sponsorships, and maybe there's, like, a quick graphic that's, like, the spice moment or whatever, you know, but kind of protect all of those things and otherwise make it sacred, because, you know, we like making hot sauces. These are things that we like to do. And a lot of, like, that idea and, like, making it into a product and then, like, putting it out into the world, all that stuff. I feel like the plate is full enough. And I don't think, like, everything should be for sale, especially in this day and age where everything's for sale everybody.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's some honor in that, though, man, because I'm thinking if I was in that spot, I would probably try to not turn it into, like, a fucking product placement galore extravaganza.
But I think most YouTube channels would, and
for sure,
every media for company sure would.
Absolutely.
You know, so
yeah,
but
no,
those
but
are the things I fight for.
There is some true, like, honor in that, because, yeah. I mean, it's easy to do, and leaving that sort of money on the table, I mean, I'm sure it's going pretty well without it, but there is that I think is kind of maybe the most, the biggest piece of evidence that I think, like, you seem pretty happy. You seem pretty content with life.
Yeah, I think, yeah,
would
it feels
you say
pretty
so?
Good. I think, you know, for a while, I've been thinking about this a little bit lately, but I think for a while, not to be, like, too self-important with this analogy or whatever, but you kind of always feel like you're drowning or something. Or the analogy that I like to do is, I felt like with Hot Ones from the very beginning, I did kind of see the potential that it had and really believed in it from the beginning, and still believe in it now. And it felt almost like a painting that I was doing that I couldn't be pulled away from, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, I don't know, kind of starting recently, like maybe even with this season, it feels like the game has slowed down a little bit, and now, like, the painting's kind of there, and I can just sit back and enjoy it for a while. You know, because I always think, if you do something else, and I've done other projects, and nothing's ever been as fulfilling or as meaningful to me as Hot Ones is. I work with people that I really care about. I'm proud of the body of work, like, especially, you know, from, like, the Gordon Ramsay episode to the Justin Timberlake episode. That, I feel, is just more than most people should expect of a chicken wing talk show on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then this season, bouncing back off the weird COVID year, feels like we kind of picked up where that left off. And I'm really proud of that. I work with people I care about. I still love doing the show, but it's not as, like, a struggle. Like, it doesn't feel like the game so fast. I'm trying not to drown anymore.
I mean, I love that. The analogy of the painting is great, because I feel like, you know, I would imagine, I'm not an artist, but I would imagine you can keep painting something forever. Like, oh, I got to add this detail. I'm going to put this shadow here. I'm going to put something in their hand. But, or you could just, you know, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the painting is done. How do you know when a painting is done and you can just sit back and enjoy it? And I think that really is only something you can, like, feel or think. You can't tell by the look of it too
that I worked so long with no success to have this sort of thing because I appreciate the lightning in a bottle that it is. And I know that, you know, who was I talking about with this the other day? Tom Segura, where he was saying, like, you know, he's like talking about, like, you know, people that get big on sitcoms and then they're like, well, I'm ready for my next chapter, you know? And he was like, oh, really? This big, huge thing that people love?
You're just going to make a ton of money and everybody enjoys it? You're over it?
Yeah, you're just
I always hate people who won't talk about their typecast or they did something that's, you know, they've done, you know, other roles that haven't popped as much. They don't want to talk about, or the band who doesn't want to play their hit. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, this one thing that like changed the world for the better. You're over it. Like,
yeah.
What?
Plus, you just are. I think in entertainment, like whatever people think you are, however they, you know, you have no control over the way that people kind of think about
absolutely
your image,
for better
like,
or worse.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's just, it is just people. It's just giving people what they want. So if that's what they want, then I'm happy to enjoy it. Yeah.
So I feel like you would not be like a rat race, keep up with the Joneses, like I got to go more.
Yeah,
like,
no, even that. I mean, I think early on it was like that and become obsessed with the growth and thinking about that all the time.
Do you have like a competitor? Is there like another show that you're kind of like, I mean, obviously there's not one that does specifically what you do, but do you look at other series, other shows, and you're like, fuck, they're better than me or bigger than me. I want to be them or chase them down.
Yeah, the way that I kind of look at it is how is the only way I can kind of compare things is, all right, we put out an interview with this guest. How does the way this interview is received, how does the way that it perform compare to the other interviews on the platform with this guest?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way that I look at it is in sort of a competitive way. How does this interview with Jack Harlow match up with this interview with Jack Harlow versus that interview with Jack Harlow versus like whatever. That's the way that I think about.
I would imagine not many do better.
Yeah,
I mean,
is that ball bounces our way
pretty fucking often.
Yeah, pretty often.
I mean, numbers that. What's the most views?
Probably Gordon. It is Gordon Ramsay, and then
what's like, that at?
I don't know. Can you look it up?
Yeah, I'm
going
through it now.
I mean,
do you have a Nick?
I saw Billie Eilish was at like 44 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And that might even be low compared to some of these other ones that have been out for
91 million.
I was going to say, are you hitting triple digi millions, man? I mean, 91 million, dude?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think anyone's beating that.
Yeah, it'd have to be one crazy interview, yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe something that Rogan would do, maybe...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
at this point, fucking Call Her Daddy might be fucking putting chicken wings in certain places. I don't even know, man.
Yeah, how about
but
that?
I mean that. How about that? Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most successful things ever on the internet.
Yeah,
think about that, man. Like you've done something in this, like I said, digital revolution. That's one of the most successful things ever.
Yeah,
crazy.
Wow.
And I would also say wildly liked. Like, other people out there were like, fuck Hot Ones, man. That show where the guy used to, fuck that, man. Like, it's so, like I said, it's not controversial. It's not, you know, you're not like, it's a black set. It's not like you're doing something fancy. You don't come off as like a tryhard. It's just like, is there anybody out there who has a problem with this? Well, you've like hacked the system, man. Because I know what you said of like, when you get big enough, there's always like haters or there's always someone who's going to twist it or whatever. So maybe that one dude who said you're misogynistic. But other than that, I would imagine... comparatively to other shows, the vast majority of people are just like, Sean, he just eats the wings and talks to the guys.
But I always think that there's a market opportunity in that, especially now, where everybody is so, where everything's cranked so much and everything's like, me, spotlight, all this stuff. I actually think that maybe not everybody wants that. You know, there's a way to hack attention and get that thing. But I think like the biggest privilege you can have in doing a show is like, I was
kind of a latchkey kid, and I remember the way that shows would kind of pace out my year. And I remember the Family Matters and Boy Meets World Christmas specials and that being, like, important on, like, TGIF. Yeah. And, you know, like, the Thursday night that South Park was on, or, you know, all these different shows and the way that I connected with them, even, like, Loveline, how we were talking earlier. So I always think about that, you know, like, what is the comfort sort of pace out your year viewing? And I think Hot Ones is that for a lot of people. Yeah. It's like even the spot on Thursday where, you know, like maybe that person is in a cubicle and during their lunch break, they watch Hot Ones on Thursday. They know they got half a day and Friday the next day. And like, so they kind of like, that is kind of a home cooking kind of feel to it.
Right.
And that's always the chord that I wanted to hit with the show, or what I think is I'm most proud of. With Hot Ones, or when people come up on the street and tell me they have those kinds of feelings towards it. So that's kind of what I've always wanted to do. But then I do think that there's a marketplace opportunity for that, for somebody who just kind of takes their job seriously and doesn't need to be the star of every show. And I always thought in an interview that gives you a little bit of an advantage, because then every time you interview somebody, the viewer experience is an extension of the guest personality. And I think that's how, with a public access 80s show in a budget set, and a generic looking bald dude in his hot sauces, that's how it can go 220 episodes.
Yeah, it goes through the roof. So latchkey kid, huh?
A little bit.
Yeah?
I mean, just parents worked a lot. Yeah. And
we had a stretch there for, like, my mom started working again, and it was a period of time where, like, we were living in separate places almost, in, like, not a, like, divorced way, but just in a weird way where, like, a family was separate for a couple of reasons. And, like, and you really, you know, you do, and I was probably like, how old were you when you were, like, latchkey in it?
I would, you know, like, some of my earliest memories of it are that way. And then through high school, and my mom was super sick, and she passed away when I was in high school. Oh, like, shit, all man. Of those things. Like, so you just had to find just ways to occupy yourself, you know?
Yeah.
You'd have friends, you'd have baseball, you'd have football. But, you know, like, what do you do with that time? You know, there's just, like, a lot of Fridays of, you know, there's $30 by the phone, order a pizza kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
for
and in
sure.
those things you find.
Yeah, leftovers are in the fridge, or here's some money to order.
Yep.
And I mean, and I, at the time that was happening, I didn't think much of
it.
No,
actually,
I wasn't like, I'm a latchkey kid.
No,
but it was like,
it was kind of sick. I even look back on it now. I was like, oh, that is kind of, it was kind of nice.
Even our white privilege shines through there. It was great not having parents around. It was amazing. But that it does, I think, whether or not, you know, it's subconscious or whatever, I think it kind of fosters a little bit of, you know, like, you just do shit on your own. You're independent. You're just like, yeah, I can just, like, get this shit done. I'll just do it myself, or, you know, I'll do the edit, or I'll post it myself, or, you know, I think that's how people start things. I think that's where it can all begin. So, well, it's a good thing that you started it, man. It's a good thing you started doing what you're doing,
because
it's paid up. You're rich now? You're a rich guy?
Who said this?
You're rich. Who said this? Yes, I am rich.
I think, no, there's a good answer. I was watching that Free Solo documentary, and somebody asked him, and he was like, I'm like a successful dentist. And so that's where, and I was like, I'm stealing that from that guy. And where I'm at. I don't know.
So,
like
you're like you own your own practice and that kind of shit? Because, you know, dentistry can get pretty.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the scale, but that's, I feel like,
successful dentist.
When he said that, I was like, oh, that's kind of where I feel I am. But then on the other side of it, though, it's not like crazy. Sort of, this is a show, you know, it's still in the context of a larger publisher.
Right.
The same way that, you know, you fight for your stake and, like, do your thing under the umbrella of Barstool. It's not, you know, I'm not a vlogger with just one camera and all these views and shit. You know,
right. There's a bigger. Would you ever think about, you know, Sean Evans Enterprises and just doing it solo?
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing is, you know, to me, I think I'm just always grabbing doorknobs, and, like, whatever doorknob opens, I run into that room and then just start looking for, like, the next doorknob. But just as a means of just surviving, it's my job. Over the years, I built no professional skills whatsoever. I can't go back. You know, this is all I can do is a cartoon job. I've been trapped in this cartoon vortex for so long that
I don't have
any skills. I can't go back. So I need to keep my job for as long as I can keep it going.
I think the cartoon vortex, like, took over the world. I don't think you need the fucking skills anymore.
Yeah, but then there's too many people in the cartoon vortex. It's a game of musical chairs, and eventually
it is. And,
you're going to get kicked out of the cartoon vortex.
I mean,
vortex.
Some of these kids come up
so much faster and so much bigger, and it's like, oh, I'll lose my spot in the vortex quick.
The more platforms will start. You know, it's not when I started doing YouTube, like every kid who's a TikTok kid now was a YouTube kid back then. And then that's shifted, you know, there's the shifting sands of time and media and the way that things change and how late night used to dominate and then YouTube, is, you know, all these things, they just get passed around.
That's
so,
what that, that's
I'm a
one trick
pony on a platform. So, you know, I'm like, my days are numbered.
It does give me anxiety where it's like, you know, it's like, okay, I have like four podcasts and I got this video series and we do a daily rundown show and I can do these specials and I can do live streams and da, da, da. And they're like, well, you know, this kid fucking can renegade, so he beats you and, you know, we'll give him all the money and all the attention. Like, fuck. You know? That is scary,
well,
but
yeah,
wait,
I was thinking about that,
one
like
trick.
Scorsese or whatever, and like they're like making films, and this is what people want.
Oh,
and then
the
just
lighting
get smashed
shit.
Now by TikTok kids
like,
and shit.
Don't give a fuck, man.
Or like kids playing video games on Twitch. You know, like you'd be like, wait, that's what people wanted this whole time.
We like quadrupled your viewers just by playing video games on. But that's, you know, the beauty of it. That's why I think, you know, eating hot wings with a black background can work. It's, you know, you might call it a one trick pony, but it's like. That's like saying fucking, you know, Secretariat can just run. You know what I mean? That pony that you're on is a dominant one, man. That's an important pony that I don't think is just going to get, like, replaced anytime soon.
Yeah,
so.
And, I, you know, playing with house money. Like, I've already done 10 laps around any expectation I ever had for myself. So just enjoy it.
It's important to recognize that. I feel like, you know, I always say if I had known that I was going to be this back then,
I would have been so
like,
happy.
So happy. Yeah, and then, but now that I'm here, I'm like, what's next? Doorknob, doorknob, doorknob. And I got to remember to, like, look back at that painting the way
always,
you are. I think it sounds like you've balanced that very well, where you do, you know, obviously you're pushing through COVID and you continue to grow and do things. But I think it sounds like you have really, like, taken in what's going on and you're, like, enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy that I caught a little heat, you know, after I turned 29, 30, you know, because at different times in your life it can all be a different way. And I think...
You're a little older, more mature, ready to do it.
Yeah, and going through, you know.
You know what's great about you? I think you could do family life and this, like, no problem.
You think? Actually, no, I don't know about that.
I mean, from a content point of view. Like, I sometimes start to get worried. My kids are getting older, and I'm like...
Oh, they're going to see this shit that I...
Yeah, and like, I don't know if I can talk about, like, fucking... This episode we did last week, Feidelberg was talking about girls farting on his dick. And I was just like, bro, I can't... I can't do this anymore, man.
Right, right.
You can eat hot wings and talk to movie stars forever. Kids,
yeah,
no kids, whatever.
I
old,
spontaneously
young.
Combust on
set. You know? Until
like,
one day you
inevitable.
Die, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
One time takes me out.
Is there any thought to that? I don't know. I don't know if you put much of your personal life out there.
No, yeah.
But is it,
no, I mean, I go to the doctor twice a year, and it's always the same thing where I'm like, you know, hook me up to everything and put me through every test because I have this weird job. But I
has
think,
it ever affected you physically?
No, actually... Things started to improve.
Like, that's amazing.
But I think it's because, you know, you do this show and you take the other things in your life much more seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to eat better when you're not on the show and
good for you,
do
though.
All that other stuff. So in that way, I think it's kind of helped things. But then too, sometimes people are like, well, how do you do it? And I'm always like, I don't know, like... How does Steph Curry play a whole basketball season? He makes that shit go for like, he's probably going to play for like 16, 17 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
there's
more of a
more
toll,
impressive.
You know, like people are always like the physical, like all that stuff. Or like, how do you do it? Like, I don't know how you do all that stuff. And I'm always like, I don't know. Like, I'm not playing linebacker for
no,
the Jets.
No, like, again,
like,
it's like you work hard.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's hard to eat hot wings, but not. Like, end your life or end your career early hard.
No. Man, I can't, like I said, I can't go back. Like, if all I have to do to not go back to that cubicle and the Microsoft Outlook is
so funny you say
eat
that,
these
like,
wings once a week, I'm good.
I have
like,
always
said...
That's
a deal with the devil that I shake.
My number one goal was to not be in
I can't,
the cube.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not going back to jail, man. Like, they gotta put me in a body bag before I go back to prison. That's the same thing. And, like, and everything on top of that is house money. And, like, luckily there's been a lot on top of it, a lot of house money. But it really is the drive every day is, like, I just don't want to go back to that shit. So keep on eating those hot wings, bro.
Yeah.
And I got an idea. Maybe you should get into the pizza game and take bites of pizza and review them.
One bite, though.
Yeah, maybe just take one single bite and then...
chocolate chip cookies and get my dad involved.
All right, man. Appreciate it, dude.
Thank you, man. Great.
What a monster moment for the Kevin Clancy Show. Sean Evans coming through. Thank you so much. One of the biggest stars on the internet today. Drop a comment below of some other stars you want to see me interview. Also, click the bell icon so you'll get a notification anytime our interviews drop. And make sure you're subscribed so that you catch every episode from here on out.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.